It's November 23, 1942. A British merchant ship, the SS Ben Lomond, steams through the South Atlantic, 750 miles east of Brazil, on its way from Cape Town to New York. Below deck, second mess steward Poom Lin, a young Chinese sailor, scrubs the tables and sweeps the floors as he tries not to worry about the danger of enemy attack. World War II is raging, and the Atlantic Ocean is one of the most dangerous theaters of the war. Nazi U-boats stalk the seas, threatening to sink merchant vessels on sight, vessels like the one Poon is in. Poon is right to worry. At that moment, German U-boat U-172 has the SS Ben Lomond in its sights. The U-boat's captain gives the order to fire, and soon torpedoes hiss through the ocean and slam into the ship's hull. Soon the vessel begins to list as its bowels fill with water. Poon scrambles for his life jacket and struggles onto the deck, blinking in the daylight. He spots a lifeboat being lowered, but the ship is sinking so fast that when he blinks again, the lifeboat is gone. His shipmates, too, are slipping and sliding into the swirling ocean. Rather than being sucked down with the ship, Poon secures his life jacket and jumps, just as the boilers explode. All around him, the sea churns. Poon's lungs scream for air. He's not sure whether he's swimming upwards or to his doom. Suddenly, he surfaces, gasping and coughing. Bobbing in a forbidding ocean, he surveys a horrific scene. Ripped and burnt timber smolders on the surface. Flames dance on the water. Dead bodies twist in the waves. But Poon Lim is alive, all alone, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and of all the 54-man crew, the sole survivor. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is November 23rd, stranded at sea. It's 1934, on an island off the south coast of China, 8 years before Poon Lim's ship is attacked. Poon is just 16 years old. It's his last day of school. He walks barefoot to the beach to celebrate with his friends. He stops for a moment to glance out to sea. On the horizon, large cargo vessels plow the water on their way to Hong Kong, dwarfing the local fishing boats. Poon thinks he's lucky to have been able to attend the local school, thanks to his brothers who sent money from their factory jobs. But there are not many prospects on the island of Hainan. Things are not much better on mainland China, where there's an ongoing civil war between nationalists and communists, and the constant threat of Japanese invasion. So Poon's fortunes might lie 300 miles along the Chinese coast to the east, in the British territory Hong Kong, a commercial hub and one of the busiest harbors in the world. Poon believes the British ships might provide a stable career, so eventually he says farewell to his village and tries to find work as a cabin boy. Poon is excited to step on his first big ship. It's a British merchant vessel, and he proudly watches the red ensign of the British Merchant Navy be raised above him. He thinks it's funny to be called a navy. There are no guns aboard ship. It's purely a commercial vessel. But in 1919, King George V, in recognition of the efforts of ordinary seamen like Poon, who kept the supply lines open during World War I, decided to redesignate the commercial force as the British Merchant Navy. But life aboard ship isn't what he imagined. Poon works hard, yet his rewards are few. He's shoved into cramped and dingy quarters with the other Asian men. He's bullied and teased, and he's denied promotion no matter how hard he works. After 3 years of such torment, in 1937, Poon leaves the Merchant Navy, disembarking in Hong Kong. He has no intention of going back to the village where his parents are still struggling to make a living, and he has no intention of returning to the ships either. Instead, he will try to make his way on land as a student. But in 1941, only a few years later, Poon stands again on the docks in Hong Kong. For the last 4 years, he's been studying engineering, but during that time, the world has changed. As Poon looks out over the sea now, he sees proof of this in the pillars of smoke rising into the sky on mainland China. Poon worries about the safety of his parents and the future of his country. World War II is in full swing. The Japanese have laid waste to China and its people with brutal violence. And only 2 years ago, Japan invaded Hainan, Poon's home island. Now they're closing in on Hong Kong. Further out to sea, British warships bristle with guns. The Royal Navy are here to protect British interests. But who will protect the Chinese people, Lim wonders. He knows he must do something, but he faces a stark choice. He can either join the Chinese army and go off to die at the hands of the Japanese, or he can rejoin the British merchant ships. Poon's father pleads with him to return to sea, certain his son will be safer there. Poon's not so sure. He knows neither the Chinese nor the British can win a war without the supplies the merchant ships bring. They cannot feed their citizens, clothe and arm their troops, or run their tanks or fly their planes. But Poon also knows the terrible stories of attacks by enemy aircraft, ships, and of course, the dreaded U-boats that hunt in wolf packs or simply lie in wait, picking off the merchant ships as they pass one by one. It is a dangerous business. Over the course of World War II, by proportion, the merchant navy will lose more men than any of the British armed forces. Still, Poon has heard that both pay and working conditions have improved for Chinese sailors. The Allies are desperate to encourage more men to crew merchant ships because so many are being lost. Maybe Poon thinks he can stock some money away for his parents. So Poon makes a decision. He joins his cousin on an old steamship, the SS Benlamund, as second mess steward. It's a marginal step up from cabin boy. And now, as Poon steps onto the ship for the first time, he nods at the other sailors on board. He's relieved to see there are 8 British Army and Royal Navy gunners on board. Many merchant ships are unarmed, and this one will not be traveling in convoy with a Royal Navy escort. Hopefully, Poon thinks, these gunners will be able to provide at least some amount of protection. Then Poon makes his way to the cabin he will share with the other Chinese sailors, the painters and the fitters, the donkey men and the pantry boy. He sighs. It's cramped and rickety. At first glance, it doesn't seem to Poon that much has changed after all. As he begins to stow away his belongings, he looks around at the solemn faces of the other men on his crew. In less than 1 year, these men will be another grim statistic, and Poon will be the lone survivor, stranded at sea, left behind to fight for survival in the middle of the Atlantic. It's December 1942, 4 weeks after Poon's ship was torpedoed in the South Atlantic Ocean. Poon lies on his side, watching the waves crash into his life raft. He's listless and weak, but every day he gives thanks for this 8-foot by 8-foot square of wood that he has made his home. After the U-boat sunk his ship, Poon was left treading water for 2 hours. He was close to giving up until he spotted the rescue raft, like a miracle, bobbing among the debris. Somehow he dragged himself onto it. The life raft was equipped with some food, a 40-liter jug of water, flares, smoke pots, a flashlight, sugar lumps, and even some chocolate. He was certain that he would be picked up as soon as someone realized the SS Benlamund had not made it to dock, but still he stretched the rations out. Now, a month later, his supplies are running out. It seems no one is coming to the rescue. The last tin of food is empty. He scoops whatever crumbs he can find onto his finger and sucks. He tips the water jug on its side and catches the last precious drops in his mouth. All around him, he can only see vast ocean stretching out to the horizon. He's searched everywhere, but he's found no tool that might help him navigate towards land. He's alone, abandoned, and if he doesn't do something soon, he will die. But Poon is a natural survivor, and growing up as a poor islander taught him a thing or two about life on the water. He rigs a system to catch rainwater in his life jacket. Next, he dismantles the flashlight. It's of no use anyway, but he can use the small wire inside, fashioning it into a fishing hook, and then turn some hemp rope into a fishing line. But he will also need a knife. The empty food tin catches his eye as it rolls with the movement of the waves. He's cut himself on the jagged metal of its lid enough times to know it's sharp, so he fashions it into the shape of a blade. Now Poon is set to catch fresh water and food. He's given himself a chance. A few weeks later, Poon Lim is still adrift in the Atlantic Ocean. He stopped marking the days. Now he counts full moons instead. That night, a violent storm rages, whipping the waves into mighty towers. Poon is certain the raft will splinter into a million pieces. He digs his fingers in and holds on. He must keep going, because during the last few weeks, he's had a few almost rescues. The first time, a cargo ship passed so close that he could see the faces of its crew. Poon waved and hollered, but the ship didn't stop. Perhaps the crew thought he was a decoy for a U-boat attack. Westerners have often mistaken him for a Japanese person. Or perhaps, as Poon believes, they didn't rescue him because he's Chinese. Another time, Poon heard the juddering of an engine and spotted a U.S. Navy patrol plane. He whooped for joy when the plane released a marker buoy. But then a storm came on, fast, and the marker was lost. These storms are regular occurrences, but the storm today is especially violent. There's nothing for Poon to do but hold on and pray. Eventually, the storm blows itself out. As Poon struggles to open his salt-encrusted eyes, he surveys the damage. His stockpile of fish has been swept away, but what's worse, so has his fresh water. Poon gazes at the cloudless sky. Seagulls circle like vultures. The glittering sea taunts him. He's surrounded by water, yet cannot drink. His tongue is swollen. His lips are cracked. The taste of blood only makes him more thirsty. He's weak from malnutrition. If he does not eat soon, he could die. So he tries catching a bird, enticing it with rotten fish. Remarkably, he snares it and wrestles it to the raft. He cuts into it with his tin knife and quenches his thirst by drinking its blood. But it's a small meal, and Poon is still hungry. Sharks have started to follow his raft. Poon almost laughs. He remembers shark's fins, hanging out to dry in the Hainan sun in his childhood, an island delicacy. This childhood memory moves Poon into action. He braids his fishing line double strength. He pries a nail from the bottom of the raft and ties the remnants of the dead bird around a new hook. He feeds the line into the water. It doesn't take long for the first shark to bite. Poon tries with all his might to haul it in, but the creature is a full meter long. Its muscles ripple as it lashes him with its tail and gnashing its teeth. Poon barely has the strength to avoid the mouth full of razors. With one hand, he struggles with the thrashing shark, and with the other, he reaches for something, anything to help. His hand finds his water jug. He scoops it full of seawater, then smashes the flailing creature over the head repeatedly until it is still. Poon collapses on the raft, gasping for breath. When his strength returns, he grabs his knife and cuts into the shark. He presses his lips to its liver. As the warm blood begins to seep, he drinks. Afterwards, feeling stronger, he slices the shark up and hangs it to dry, just as the islanders did when he was a boy. He hopes the meat will sustain him long enough for someone to find him, and Poon won't have to wait long. Soon, the forces of nature, or perhaps fate, will blow Poon's raft in the direction of his salvation. Poon's feet will touch land, and his months-long nightmare at sea will finally come to an end. It's April 5th, 1943, 4 months since Poon's ship was torpedoed and sunk. Poon is now a master of survival, but he is still alone. So to keep himself company, he hangs over the edge of the raft, staring at his own reflection in the deep, dark ocean. Growing tired of his reflection, Poon pushes himself onto his knees and takes in his surroundings. He notices that something about the water seems different. It's paler, more green than blue. It must be shallower. He looks out over the horizon, and there, in the distance, rising out of the ocean, is land. Poon immediately starts paddling for the shore, and soon three local Brazilian fishermen will spot his strange craft and rush to help. Months after his ship was torpedoed, Poon stands on the east coast of Brazil, relishing the feel of the sand between his toes. He's painfully thin, his ribs protruding, his hair ragged, his beard scraggly, but he has some strength and he can walk on his own. People are astonished to learn that he kept himself fit by swimming every day. Like many of the merchant seamen of World War II, especially the Chinese, Poon was used to being overlooked. But the impact of his adventure was immediate. The Royal Navy updated its survival manuals with what Poon learned on the high seas. The British government used his story as a morale booster. And as part of its propaganda efforts, a Ministry of Information film trumpeted the vital contribution of the Chinese to the war effort in Europe. Poon was even awarded the British Empire Medal by King George VI. But Poon himself remained humble to the end. He survived 133 days alone in the Atlantic, a world record for the longest survival at sea on a raft. When told of this record, Poon reportedly said, "I hope no one will ever have to break it." 79 years after that day, November 23, 1943, when Poon found himself stranded alone in the ocean, you might be pleased to know that nobody has. Next on History Daily, November 24, 1971, an unidentified man, known later only as D.B. Cooper, hijacks a Boeing 747, extorts $200,000 in ransom money, and parachutes to an uncertain fate. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily. Hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing and sound design by Misha Stanton. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Vanessa DeHaan. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.